Okay, three, two.
Three, two, hit it!
Welcome to Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert, only on Sputnik Radio. Now, later on in the broadcast, we're going to be talking to crypto entrepreneur Justin. But first, let's discuss some of the events we're seeing here in Puerto Rico. We're on the Atlantic Ocean. You'll hear the ocean crashing behind us. We're meeting a lot of great young entrepreneurs. Stacey, what's your impression so far?
This is America, right? I'm so proud that Puerto Rico is part of America and they're American citizens. And I think we should all just be one nation. But I like them actually being their own territory so that they could then have all sorts of experimental economic policies and invite us down here to pay 0% taxes. Yay!
You know, interesting mix, really, because I think that the powers that be had kind of assumed that they had Puerto Rico under their thumb and that they would never have a way out and a path forward. But then the crypto explosion hit, and everywhere around the world where people are experiencing dollar hegemony and financial repression are saying, wait a minute, the whole world has restarted again. Bitcoin is something new, and we can reexamine our plight and maybe escape. And so Puerto Rico falls into that category. And will it become the next crypto Switzerland, as so many countries are vying for that title, including Switzerland? That's yet to be seen, but Puerto Rico is certainly one of the leaders in that category, Stacey.
It's very vibrant here. The food is great, the music is great, and the ocean is great. I love those sounds of the waves behind you. Everywhere you go on the island, you hear it all night long while you're trying to sleep. But, you know, here we have been at these back-to-back crypto conferences. Thousands of people flew down here, some of them paying thousands of dollars for the tickets. It's just an amazing space right now. Max and I had not gone to any Bitcoin conferences for, like, we took a 2-year break, and then to come back and see like thousands of people at these events that used to just have like 15 people, maybe 30 people. So let's talk to this young guy. Introduce yourself and tell the audience who you are and what you're doing here down in Puerto Rico. And would you actually move here like all these other crypto utopia people?
So what you're saying is you retired and decided to live on the beach, and then you got bored, and 2 years later you came back?
Exactly. Well, if you know, we are on radio, this is a podcast, so you can't see Justin, but Justin, to me, of course, looks like 18. I'm sure he's older, but he is also retired. This is the sort of crypto utopia where you retire and you still look like Justin.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to retire in my 20s, but I don't tell people exactly. So I am Crypto Kid. That's what people call me, Justin. I live in a treehouse. The purpose of that is to be very frugal, to stay in touch. Because the reality of all of the living situation of most of the people in the world is not like what we have. So I try to at least keep my feet on the ground. Well, I guess not, because I live in a treehouse. But anyway, I read the white paper in 2009. It blew my mind because it reminded me of DNA.
DNA. So give us your background. When you read, were you a computer engineer? Or like, how did you know what you were reading?
Yeah, so I was just in school and I was a pro gamer traveling around, but I knew I wanted to change the world and that the way that would happen would be in science somehow. So I read this website, PhysOrg, every day for 2 hours. It wasn't necessarily fun, but I bit my tongue and did it. And that's when I came across a scientific paper for Bitcoin. And of course, that was around the bailouts, so there were ideological reasons. But the real reason I was really interested in it is the pattern behind how it works. Because if you think about it, it's like nature, the original distributed system. All the cells in your body have a full copy of the chain. And if one of them breaks the rules or gets corrupted, there's no king cell. There's no cell that is the king of all the other cells. The other ones, just through a distributed architecture, kill that corrupt cell or kick it out of the tribe. If you think of it like a hunter-gatherer tribe, for most of human civilization, pre-civilization actually, our ancestors lived in small groups in the forest. And if you could see someone breaking the rules, everybody could see each other. You could just kick them out of the tribe. You didn't need a king or a government or a judge or a lawyer or a politician or taxes.
Right. So fascinating and insightful analogy to DNA. And of course, that's the basis for evolution and the process of mutations coming along. And somehow those survive against the background of ever-changing ecology. And you end up now with those principles being applied to money. So money was always an artificial construct. And money, it was always difficult for people to embrace because it seemed to be unfair in many ways. It was hard to move around, hard to organize. And yet here with cryptocurrencies, it's like money suddenly became, made sense in a lot of ways in that it mimicked and met the some of the natural processes. DNA being one, photosynthesis, you know, is another natural process that is brilliant. You know, the plants are basically breathing in carbon and exhaling oxygen, and that's part of the ecosystem. So would you just continue down this thought a little bit, Justin. So the DNA of money, and how does money then change in itself, or does it change? Your thoughts?
Yeah, so you've heard this before, but money, I think of it as the first app on the blockchain, like email was the first app on the internet. And smart contracts is the second app on the blockchain, like websites were the second app on the internet. And then on top of websites, we got search engines and social networks and wikis and blogs and virtual worlds and virtual reality. Literally every app on your smartphone is an app on the internet. So over the next 20 years, if you plot the number of apps being built on especially the Ethereum ecosystem, but all of them really, it's following the same exponential trajectory. And so over the next 20 years, it's going to replace lawyers and judges and title companies. And honestly, what replaces all of that, government itself, will be so much better than what we have now, just as Google is so much better than any library, or Netflix is so much better than any Blockbuster video store. What emerges on the other end of this, not only will it be pretty much free, like apps on the internet are pretty much free, so you won't have to pay taxes anymore, but it'll just be so much higher quality, we can't even fathom it right now.
I'm going to tie them all these things together, including DNA, into this, into the evolution of Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ecosystem, because you mentioned email being the first app for the internet, and then the internet, the dot-com boom happened. You were probably too young to be around them. Max was involved in that, one of the big dot-com companies, and, you know, there was an explosion of dot-com companies, and everybody started pouring money into it. A lot of them died, but a lot of them, that even the likes of, say, Amazon crashed 90%, Cisco crashed 90%. All these companies crashed 90% because nobody knew, like, what they had gotten involved in and what they no longer knew how to determine what was actually going to be worth something one day. And then now we see the giants, the Amazons, the Googles, the Facebooks, and stuff like that. So when you look at this sort of space now, as I said, we took a two-year break and we come back and there's tokens and coins and thousands of them and everybody pitching an ICO. Do you feel like that's good for the ecosystem? Are you interested in looking at people experimenting with stuff? And are you assuming that 95% of all these tokens will just die a horrible death?
Yes, it's pretty obvious there's going to be a shakeout. I think we're far from it, though. If you look at the dot-com bubble, tech stocks reached $3 trillion before the bubble popped. And the blockchain ecosystem barely reached $1 trillion. So I think if you take into account the number of people that drove the dot-com bubble in the United States, it's probably like 50 million people with a brokerage account. Now there's 50 million people in just one of the countries participating in the blockchain bubble, and they could do it right from their smartphone when like pressing a few buttons. So it is reasonable. Obviously, this is not investment advice. It's just my opinion that this could be 10 times bigger than the dot-com bubble. So instead of $3 trillion, $30 trillion. And so I'm plotting my strategy to maybe coincide with that. But yeah, you really brought up a good point. Due diligence is practically impossible.
Right. Due diligence is impossible because it's very hard to come up with the metrics. When you're dealing with a new asset class that never existed before, I mean, who would have predicted what the printing press would do to the Catholic Church when it was first introduced, and other, you know, paradigm shifting technologies. Now, Justin, I'm curious to you, because you've achieved a certain level of financial independence, you retired, but do you still seek out partners to work with around the world? And is that something that you're actively looking to do, or is the space so atomized and splintered up that it's hard to even seek out alliances because the landscape is shifting so rapidly at all times, and you end up kind of sticking to your own, you know, guns, is almost isolated to a degree. I'm not sure that question makes a lot of sense, but what are your thoughts anyway?
So the way I do it is similar to Mark Andreessen's philosophy of investing in strength, not lack of weakness. Because you could have this checklist where you're like, yeah, make sure they're a good team, good this, good that. And then if they have one weakness, you're like, oh, scrap the whole thing. Mark Andreessen's firm, they look for one radical strength and they invest on that. And they figure that the rest can sort of fall into place. So for me, the other method I use is I'm actively trying to invent the future, and I'll hit a roadblock, technical roadblock, and it's like, oh, I need this in order to build this app. Like if you wanted to build Netflix in 1996, you'd be like, oh, we need like scaling solutions, and we need this infrastructure, we need an interface and all this. So I try to build something and then I work backwards to see what needs to be built before as the prerequisites for that. And then that's where I take my money and strategically support those infrastructure projects.
Now, you mentioned Mark Andreessen there, VC in Silicon Valley. What other names do you looking at and have respect for? You know, Peter Thiel's a big name in the space, obviously, and some others. What are some of the other people in the space that you look toward that you respect? Who you think are helping to shape this whole future?
I'm actually more interested in the ones that aren't. Like, why the hell is Elon Musk not full in on this? Somehow it's remained off his radar for years. It boggles my mind. In fact, a lot of the concerns Elon Musk has when he's interviewed about centralized AI and new governance on Mars and corruption and pollution and all of the stuff that free markets could solve. If you just add blockchain to what he's saying, these economic incentive models would solve all the problems he's so concerned about. So somebody needs to just grab him and shake him and like, do you not realize this is the next step in evolution?
Well, he seems to be doing a good business in flamethrowers. So everybody likes that. But let's wrap up with talking about Puerto Rico. Because what would be the process? Why would you want to move here? Would it just be tax avoidance? Or is it just like the island, the people, the culture? What do you think it's like a restart? It's a blank slate here. What draws you to possibly thinking about moving here?
Yeah, so looking at history, the printing press was embraced by Europe, but it was banned by the Ottoman Empire. And for almost 1,000 years following that, the region around there sort of was just, it fell into stagnancy. Europe, you know, it grew, but the most important applications like constitutions and freedom of speech and the books that were the most important were banned in Europe. So those killer apps on the printing press had to be built in a virgin land where there was no government, no regulation. And so the founding fathers of the United States came to this new land to experiment with a whole new governance architecture we now know as capitalism. So I think a very similar thing is going to play out in the blockchain space, where the most important apps on the blockchain are banned. And we're going to have to go somewhere else to experiment with those. Maybe it's Africa. Hell, maybe it's Mars. I don't know. But I think Puerto Rico is a good testbed, since it's an opportunity to rebuild. Since every problem is an opportunity in disguise, we have the opportunity to like experiment with mesh networking, distributed storage, distributed electrical, like solar battery storage. At Dapply, the company I invested in and consult, they call it T0. Sorry, not T, P, product zero. You start from the base, most fundamental base layers that is required for individual sovereignty. Electricity and energy and food production and connectivity using mesh networks, and rebuild everything from scratch in a decentralized architecture.
Okay, well, that's going to do it for this edition of Double Down with Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert. Thanks to our guest, Crypto Kid. Justin, you can reach him on social media. Just look for Crypto Kid Show. Sounds good. Until next week. Bye, y'all.